Welcome to Clarity Lab, where I talk to leading health and science experts to educate, inform, and dismantle misinformation. And if you are a human on this planet in 2025, you probably know what a problem misinformation is. I'm Derek Barris, and Clarity Lab is the official podcast of Cyrus Health, a 501c3 nonprofit I founded to build a free educational platform and curate social media channels that feature experts presenting health and science in a clear and compelling manner. And since we are a nonprofit, all your donations are tax deductible, which helps support our mission. Please visit cyrushealth.org to learn about what we're doing and what we plan to do in the future. And if you can support us, we would greatly appreciate it. Joseph Mercola says statins are doing more harm than good, and he'll sell you the supplements that he swears will be better for you. Dave Asprey says statins decrease testosterone and cause brain fog, and then he'll sell you supplements. Kaylee Means, yeah, he'll sell you supplements via his warehouse TrueMed after shitting on statins. Statins have long been targeted by supplement salesmen who love spreading pseudoscience about cholesterol. So I wanted to go big for this topic, and thankfully, Dr. Danielle Bilardo agreed to chat. Dr. Danielle Bilardo is a preventative cardiologist in Los Angeles, as well as international speaker and published researcher. She partners with her patients through a team-based approach, blending cutting-edge medical care with comprehensive lifestyle changes, emphasizing nutrition, exercise, and stress management. She also used to run her own podcast, and she did a multiple-part series on statins and cholesterol, which I'll link to in the show notes if you want the real deep dive. And I'm really glad that through the power and reach of conspirituality, I've become friends with Danielle over the years. When it comes to statins and cholesterol, I really hope you're going to learn something here because this is one of the foremost experts. And I'm really kind of tired of all the noise about statins that I hear in the wellness community. So let's find the signal. Danielle, thank you for joining. I wanted to talk to you because one of the most villainized interventions that I see in wellness spaces, especially over the last year, has been statins. People like Joe Mercola is always talking negatively about them. I've seen some others. Big picture, can you just explain how statins work?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, even though people who villainize statins have certainly been gaining, you know, some attention on social media for the last few years, this is actually nothing new. Mercola has been at this for decades. And so this has kind of always been in the background in cardiology, something we've had to deal with. Statins are one of the greatest invention in medicine and in pharmacotherapy that we've seen in many, many, many decades. Statins really came out, they've been out for a while, since the 1990s. What they are is a medication, they're called an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. So that's an enzyme that is in active in the liver that synthesizes cholesterol. And what they do is they inhibit that enzyme, and that in turn inhibits the process of developing atherogenic lipoproteins like cholesterol. And by atherogenic, I mean these are the lipoproteins like LDL cholesterol and ApoB that seed themselves in the vessel's walls and cause atherosclerosis, so coronary artery disease, peripheral artery disease, stroke. Statins inhibit that pathway, allowing to reduce cholesterol, but they also, in addition to their LDL lowering effect, they also have what we call pleiotropic effects, which means that outside of their LDL lowering, they have a multitude of other benefits. They help with plaque stabilization. So once someone's developed coronary artery disease and they have some plaque in their coronary arteries, they are in this category we now call secondary prevention. These statins, outside of just their LDL lowering capabilities, help to stabilize the plaque that is there, because the plaque itself being there for some people can cause symptoms and problems, but for some people they can be asymptomatic. But the reason why plaque stabilization is so important is that what causes a heart attack or a stroke is actually that plaque rupture. So the stabilization part of that pleiotropic effect of a statin is incredibly beneficial. So They've reduced morbidity and mortality. They are incredibly effective medications. We have tons and tons and tons of trials showing their safety and efficacy. They're by no means for every single person. There are certain criteria for who needs to be on one and who doesn't. But for the patients who do have guideline-directed benefit being on statins, they're life-saving.
And you once told me you consider statins to be the best longevity medicine.
I know, and that's a little tongue-in-cheek there, because longevity is a little bit of a trigger word for pseudoscience. But I always said that if these longevity gurus who tout all of these like evidence-less BS supplements and things on the side, you know, if they were truly evidence-based, they would actually be trying to encourage, you know, more people to go on statin medical therapy. The problem is, and we say this as cardiologists all the time, the problem is that statins are generic and they're $4 and they're not expensive. And so there's no one profiting off of statins. And when no one's profiting off of something, unfortunately, it leaves an area for an industry to profit off of the misinformation surrounding them. And so oftentimes, I have this conversation with patients as a cardiologist, I have this conversation with patients every day. My patients who, you know, who this comes up with, I feel my heart goes out to, because they are just looking for health solutions. They're just looking for health information. And what I say to them is, you know, anytime you see statin misinformation online, see if the person who's promoting that is either selling you a health program, a nutrition program, a supplement, some sort of protocol. If they are advertising or selling something, you know why the ulterior motive is there.
Related to that, especially bro podcaster biohacking space, I see a lot of hot takes on cholesterol. Can you tell me what the latest that we know about cholesterol and its role in heart disease is?
Even though, you know, if someone spends some time online, you know, you would think that just from the impression you get from things that people are saying on Instagram or TikTok and stuff like that, you may think, oh, there's so much confusion and debate in this space. That's actually not the case. So in actual cardiology, you know, I'm very involved in the American Society of Preventive Cardiology, the American Heart Association, the American College of Cardiology, and at our annual meetings, there's absolutely no cardiologist there debating the importance of atherogenic cholesterol particles like LDL cholesterol, apolipoprotein P, and lipoprotein A being the causative agent in atherosclerosis. That's not debated in cardiology at all. It's only debated on social media. So we, thankfully, in cardiology, I always say I'm really lucky, because I look at some of my friends and other specialties, you know, in oncology or rheumatology, in certain areas where you can give someone all the treatments and they can unfortunately, you know, not improve or get better. We are spoiled in cardiology. And the reason why we are spoiled is because, not to say that we won't discover more, of course we will, we'll always discover more, but we really do have the foundational knowledge of really understanding in many, many ways, the process of atherosclerosis, the process of why cholesterol builds up in the heart. And so it is unequivocally, LDL cholesterol is unequivocally the cause of atherosclerosis. There's other agents, other factors that play into at what threshold your LDL will cause atherosclerosis throughout the body. And that could depend on things like other risk factors like hypertension, diabetes, obesity, and various other factors. But the causative agent, you cannot develop atherosclerosis without LDL cholesterol. That is what is seeding its way in the vessels and causing atherosclerosis. The confusion that a lot of people say about cholesterol out there, which we say all the time, is that your brain needs cholesterol to survive. This couldn't be more false, because actually every cell in the body, and this is very well established in the science, so every cell in the body, whether it's the cell in your toe, the cell in your nose, the dendrites or oligodendrocytes in the brain, or neurons, every cell, the cells that make hormones, so your endocrine cells, cells in the ovaries, the cells in the testes, every cell in the body has the cell machinery that allows it to synthesize cholesterol. It does not need any exogenous cholesterol. Every cell can create cholesterol. And so we don't need any extra cholesterol, because all the cells in the body can make it. And we actually have a tremendous amount of data now showing that there really is no floor to safety for LDL cholesterol. There was a question mark when we start to get more effective medical therapies, you know, on top of statins, we, you know, in certain patients that are high risk, we'll add things like a PCSK9 inhibitor. And there was this question mark before, many, many, many years ago, of, wow, well, these are super effective. We're getting our LDL down to 20. Is that safe? And we've actually found out, yes, it's tremendously safe. Not to say that everyone needs to get their LDL to 20, but we really have realized now that the safety for cholesterol, there is really no floor. It's very safe to get someone's LDL cholesterol down, and it's really accepted in cardiology that the lower is the better. That being said, by no means am I targeting everyone's LDL cholesterol to the floor. That depends on their own personal medical history and their cardiovascular risk factors. But it's the misinformation surrounding cholesterol gives people a lot of hesitation with starting statins. Another big one that I wanted to mention too, because this is a huge one, is that statins cause dementia. And this couldn't be more false. Actually, I would say outside of preventive cardiology and cardiologists in general, the people we compete with prescribing the most statins is probably preventive neurologists. And that's because we have a tremendous amount of robust data that now shows us that statins are very, very effective in prevention for dementia, because there was actually a large meta-analysis that showed that statins reduced the risk of Alzheimer's dementia by, 32% and all-cause dementia by, I believe it was around 20%. And the reason why is because now we're believing the vast majority of dementia, whether it's Alzheimer's or vascular dementia, is caused by the same underlying etiology that causes atherosclerosis. So the same way plaque builds up in the arteries in our heart is the same way it builds up in our brain, and a similar process. So that's why I say we're really lucky in cardiology, because when we target all the risk factors that impact heart disease, we're not just helping patients live a longer life, we're actually helping patients live a longer and better quality of life. Because a lot of the things that reduce quality of life as we age, like dementia, stroke, things that are debilitating, heart failures, heart attacks, things like that, prevention really is key. Getting people on the right, medical therapy. And of course, as you know, lifestyle change is incredibly important. And it's not a binary one or the other. It's always both.
I know this is anecdote, but my father turned 80 last year. He has been on a statin for nearly 40 years. He's showing no signs of dementia. He is extremely healthy. And of course, these are a lot of factors going into it, but it also alleviated any sort of fears I would have, because genetic high cholesterol runs in my family.
Right.
I have not gone on one yet. I'll be 50 soon, but I'm also not, when it happens, it happens.
Right.
And in this process, we once talked and you told me about the importance of a calcium score, which I then got. And can you just explain what that is?
Yeah. So a calcium score is a great test. And first of all, also, I just want to stop and mention with your dad, that's amazing. And even though that's an anecdote, I will say that it warms my heart, because I will tell you, a lot of my patients who are in their 90s, anytime I meet a patient who's really functional and doing really well in their 90s or above, I cannot help myself. I'm always like, tell me your secrets. What are the key? And the answers would surprise you. They're around the world. They're like, I've had patients that'll say, I drink orange soda every day for the last 60 years. And I'm literally like, just orange soda? Yeah. One patient says she has dessert every night. It's never like some people say it's because I've always had, cats or dogs. And so, there's always these reasons, and it's never like, I was a world champion weightlifter or something like that. It's always like these things that are silly that are interesting. But one unifying thing I've seen with a lot of my patients who've done really well and that are super, super, super independent and functional in their 90s is that their doctors were early adopters of statins, and that is luck of the draw. 30 years ago in the 90s, when these were really starting to get prescribed, not a lot of doctors were, super comfortable, or, it was a new drug, et cetera. And, looking back now, I always think, well, damn, you had a doctor who was spot on, because it's really just tremendous. And I don't want anyone hearing this to think that every single person listening has to go on a statin. That's not the case either. There's very specific, criteria, which is a whole podcast in itself, of who can benefit from it and who needs one and who doesn't. But that being said, to just reiterate that if you're sitting here listening to this conversation and kind of been, your doctor's been telling you for a while to go on one, and you're like, I don't know. I want people to just get some reassurance that there's a lot of tremendous data, both anecdotal, but of course, most importantly, very robust, well done, rigorous research that should reassure them that these are incredibly beneficial. But skipping to a calcium score. So calcium score is a great test. 50% of people, the first time that they find out they have atherosclerosis, so they have cholesterol buildup in the heart, is at their first heart attack. We always say in preventive cardiology that just need not be the case anymore. It just does not have to be that way. You don't have to wait till you have a heart attack to find out you have coronary disease. What a calcium score is, it's a CT scan, and it's very low in radiation. I would say the radiation equivalent is probably like somewhere near the radiation exposure you would get on a flight from New York to LA and back. Like, not a ton of radiation, because overtesting to me is also a problem in and of itself. And so I'm very mindful about over-radiating people and things like that. But it's a very low radiation CAT scan with no IV contrast. And what it's looking at is called a calcium score. And some people sometimes think that this has to do with actual calcium that we eat and things like that. Actually, no. So what it's looking at is that cholesterol, when it builds up in the arteries over time, it starts to architecturalize and calcify. And as it's calcified and it gets harder in the vessels, you can do this non-contrast CT and you can see what someone's calcium score is. And so it's essentially using Agostin units as a measurement to churn out how much calcified plaque does someone have in their coronary arteries. And it's an incredibly valuable diagnostic tool. Now, it's not valuable for everyone, meaning since plaque takes some time to architecturalize depending on someone's risk factors, there's less value for it in people under the age of 40, say. If someone has very few risk factors and they're in their mid-40s, it may actually not even be super valuable either. I would venture to say pretty much everyone over the age of 50 could benefit from at least, you know, one calcium score screening just to make sure to see how much plaque they have. But that being said, I will do it for certain patients if they're younger. We'll use a bit slightly different testing modality if they have a tremendous amount of risk factors. The reason why it's such a valuable test is because it tells us whether or not there's calcified plaque in the coronary arteries. And the way this is helpful is that rather than waiting for your first heart attack or stroke, you will find out, okay, so say if someone, one of my patients finds out they have, you know, a plaque buildup in two of their three coronary arteries, and it will give us a score, and that score also gives us a percentile, so it matches you based on age and sex where you are compared to the population. And all of these variables, the score, your age, your risk factors, and where you are in your percentile, allows us to direct medical therapy and our recommendations specific to that person. Because before calcium scores, we'd use something called, which some people still use, and I'll use sometimes in some scenarios, but we used what's called pooled cohort equations for risk estimators. So this is pooled cohort equations take into account a tremendous amount of, you know, data from millions and millions of, you know, patients, and says, okay, well, if you plug in your cholesterol, your blood pressure, your sex, your age, things like this, what is your 10-year risk? Or what is your 15-year risk or your 30-year risk of coronary disease? But this, rather than just guessing based on biomarkers, it actually just tells us, is there calcified plaque there or not? And it's valuable two ways. One is, in some cases, if someone's kind of on the fence about starting a medication, and it turns out their calcium score is zero, depending on what their other risk factors are, they may still require a statin. But sometimes if their risk factors are very low and they don't have a genetic form of elevated cholesterol, like familial hypercholesterolemia or elevated lipoprotein A, that may buy them some time to try to get their cholesterol down with diet, lifestyle changes as much as possible without a medication safely, knowing that the, you know, the calcium score gives us a window of lower risk. It also helps us guide and prevent people from having those heart attacks or strokes, because as soon as you have a non-zero calcium score, as soon as you develop some plaque in your coronary arteries, the process has begun. You start to architecturalize coronary plaque in the arteries. And I tell patients, even just having a low score is significant, because any plaque can rupture. If you have a score of 300, a chunk of plaque can break off and cause a heart attack. If you have a score of 10, a chunk of plaque can break off. The most important variable here is that once you find out what is there, we can treat that person aggressively with lifestyle, diet, as well as guideline-directed medical therapy to reduce their risk so drastically that they have the same prognosis as someone without coronary disease. That's the win. You almost get to level the playing field by treating all of their risk factors according to how much risk they have actually developed through, you know, the last, say, 50 years they've been on the planet.
And I'll say, insurance did not cover my calcium score, but thankfully it was only $150. So I think for that sort of information, it was worth it.
Here's a couple things. So I agree. So here's a few things I tell patients too. One is that now, actually, more and more, insurance is, for many people, starting to cover it. But if they don't cover it, I always tell patients, price shop, because a calcium score is not a sophisticated test. There are certain tests that are. If I'm doing a CT coronary angiogram on a patient, I want them to go to a specific academic center where they're going to use specific protocols, and I'm a little bit more picky. A calcium score is ubiquitously done at radiology centers everywhere, and I say, go to the place where you're going to get it for like $100, $150, not the place where they're going to charge you $400, because it's the same test.
Nice. You've kind of addressed my last question throughout, but let's close for people who might be on the fence and they're in a position where they may have to take one. What sort of advice, non-medical, of course, this is a podcast, but what type of advice would you give someone who is considering a statin to maybe get them away from the fear mongering and towards some good evidence-based medical advice?
I think that's a great question. And I think my answer may surprise you. My answer is not just listen to your doctor and go on a statin by any means. My answer is actually It is totally okay to have questions. It is so okay to have questions, and it's okay to want answers. That is absolutely reasonable. I think that patients have to be their best advocate, and you have to feel comfortable. So, you know, evidence-based medicine is made of providing patients with the best available evidence we have to date, but none of that matters if you are not actually applying that to the person sitting in front of you. And that is the shared decision-making part, is doing what matters to that patient's individual values, their individual fears, their concerns. And so for the person who is nervous, I think the most important thing is to, one, is to seek expert opinion. So look for someone who is a cardiologist that really focuses in prevention. And this can be like a little trial and error until you find a doctor that you feel like you're really heard. I actually would just really emphasize that trial and error, finding a cardiologist, to give primary care doctors a little bit of grace. The fact that primary care physicians, they are managing a bunch of things. They're doing, you know, someone comes with an ankle pain, or they come in with, you know, a respiratory infection, or, you know, high cholesterol. They have to manage quite a lot. I wouldn't expect a primary care doctor who has to know so much about so many specialties to know as much about cardiology as I do, because I don't know anything about half of the orthopedic things they're doing, right? So I think one is asking to see a cardiologist, especially looking for a preventive cardiologist, I think is a good idea, especially someone that focuses on prevention. Like my entire focus is on cardiovascular disease prevention. I think that's helpful. And then asking your concerns and your questions. I literally have patients that will send me a TikTok or YouTube video, and we will go through the claims in it, and I will explain to them line by line the counter. I'm quite lucky. I think that through this kind of exercise of actually answering those questions, patients feel not forced to do it or not scared into taking the medication. They actually just feel comfortable and realize, wow, that was a lot of misinformation. And so I think advocating for yourself, if you get a first opinion and you feel like you didn't vibe with that doctor, they brushed you off, they didn't answer your questions, get a second opinion. Always try to find, you know, an expert that you mesh with, rather than, I think the thing that you and I both have seen a big theme of is that healthcare in general in many ways is broken. Our traditional system is broken. And a lot of people seek alternative medicine and alternative practitioners, not because the people listening to this or patients of mine that have sought alternative things, it's not because they're not intelligent or they don't realize. It's because they have been kind of, in many ways, felt pushed in that direction because they want to feel heard. My plea to everyone is you deserve to feel heard, but you can feel heard by an evidence-based physician and marry the best of both worlds, where you're getting the best information that's going to be what's best for you and your longevity, but it may just not be the first doctor you meet. You may have to do, you know, see a second, and never feel bad. This is the other thing I run into. Sometimes patients already have a cardiologist and then they come to see me and they're like, oh, I wonder if my cardiologist is going to be upset. If you are a good doctor, you have no problem with your patient getting a second, third, fourth, fifth opinion. I encourage, any of my patients wanted to get a second or third opinion, I stand on what I recommend because it's based on the best available science, right? So any doctor that's, you know, worth their value is not going to have any ego issue with that at all. So don't worry about that. Put yourself and your priorities and your health first. Advocate for yourself. But try to find an evidence-based provider, especially in preventive cardiology, even if it's just about going on cholesterol medication. Get your questions answered before you just say no to it forever.